It doesn't mean things have to be the same for me. You're right. I'm sorry. So, what is this important news of yours? Oh, I know. You're pregnant. And why did she have to keep going on about that? Couldn't she accept the fact that I didn't want another child? No? Okay, so tell me what it is, she said, taking hold of my hand. I'm going to quit my job. She snatched her hand away. You're not, are you? Yes, Mum. You see, some time ago I met an incredible man. You're cheating on Sebastian, she said indignantly. Mother, stop interrupting and let me explain. Of course I'm not cheating on Sebastian. The man I met has been counseling me over the past few months to help me take stock of my life and try to recapture the happiness I had lost. What do you mean, lost? I thought you were happy. Why didn't you tell me? I don't understand. You have a job, a husband who loves you, a wonderful son.
Yes, Mum. I have all that, and I thought I was happy too.
But then one morning I woke up, feeling completely empty, but terribly restless at the same time. Thanks to Claude, I'm finding a meaning to life again. Claude? His name is Claude? And what does he do?
He's a routinologist.
Silence.
It's a new approach to personal development. It's very effective, I said, trying to justify myself.
It sounds like nonsense, she immediately retorted.
You know you have to be careful. There are so many charlatans about these days. They say they'll make your dreams come true and give you a better life. But once you're hooked,
I knew she'd say that.
Mother, it's not like that at all. When will you stop treating me like a little girl? You don't have to be frightened for me. I know what I'm doing.
Another silence, which set my nerves jangling.
I'm finally going to fulfill my dream, Mum. To start working in children's fashion.
You do realize that it's a pretty crowded area, don't you?
I could tell she was veering between anxiety and anger. Yes, but I've come up with a unique concept. Do you know what leasing is?
Leasing? No.
It's a practical, economical, and sustainable system that allows people to rent things, with the possibility of buying them later on. It's already very common with car dealerships and toy makers. In the current financial crisis, parents don't want to buy luxury clothes for their babies. It's too expensive when they only use them for such a short period of time. But I'll give them a chance to rent them, paying only between 5 and 15 euros a month. I'm sure it'll be a huge success. I was getting carried away, but it was obvious that my mother didn't share my enthusiasm.
And that's what you're giving up a permanent job for? When all your life I've tried to make you understand how important financial stability is? Do you realize you could destabilize your family if it doesn't work out? What'll happen to Adrienne if you run out of money?
Why must you always imagine the worst? I need you to believe in me, Mum. Not have you shooting down all my ideas. You're always so pessimistic.
What does Sebastian think of this?
He's supporting me. We've done the math to make sure we can get by in the early days.
But it's such a risk.
Yes, but isn't life itself a risk? You have to understand that to me this project is a huge breath of fresh air. I feel as if I'm living again, as if I'm finally being me. No response. It was like pissing in the wind.
Okay, I think I'll go now. I can see you're not going to accept this.
She didn't try to stop me. It was as though she'd been hit with a sledgehammer. Out in the street, a wave of conflicting emotions swept over me. I was sad that my mother didn't understand me. Annoyed that she never trusted my ability to make a go of something, and yet, at the same time, liberated because I had had the courage of my convictions. I had been true to my dreams and to the real me, and at last I had stopped trying to please her. I was daring to live my own life and not one that my mother had imagined for me. Despite this, I was still a little uncomfortable in this new skin of mine. I was excited about my new project. But what would happen if in the end I failed? What if my mother was right? These thoughts niggled away at my happiness. I had to talk to Claude about it. Surely he would be able to help. 27. Claude had arranged to see me for another of his unpredictable but enlightening lessons. This time, though, I knew exactly where we were to meet. The Louvre. I couldn't figure out why he had dragged me here, and as we made our way through the interminable galleries, I wondered what on earth he would pull out of his magician's hat this time. While waiting to discover this, I told him about my confrontation with my mother. He seemed distant somehow, which wasn't like him at all. He must have something on his mind. Was he actually listening to me? I was doing my best to explain how I was feeling and how badly my mother's skepticism had shaken me, but he didn't react at all, just carry on strolling past the paintings. Claude, you're not listening to me, I finally protested, annoyed. How could he be so detached when I was in such turmoil? After all, he was the one who had brought me here. If it was just to see him acting as though I wasn't there, what was the point? He did not reply, but raised a finger to his lips to stop me talking. This made me so furious I almost exploded. However, he sped up, and with an enigmatic smile, well suited to this temple to the Mona Lisa, he led me to the room with all the works of the great master Leonardo da Vinci. Still without a word, he made me sit down on one of the benches in front of his last great masterpiece, The Virgin and Child with Saint Anne. We stayed for a long while, gazing at the canvas.
What can you see, Camille? He eventually asked me.
Perplexed, my eyes surveyed the painting in search of its meaning.
Well, I can see the Virgin Mary, who seems to want to pick up the baby Jesus, but at the same time the child is trying to get away from her because he's more interested in grabbing the ears of that lamb. As for Mary's mother, Saint Anne, she looks to me to be rather detached, but she has a kindly face.
Claude smiled at my description.
In fact, Camille, I brought you here to show you this painting, and to explain that for me, it reflects the mother-child relationship.
The mother-child relationship. An image of Adrienne whispering into the crook of my neck. I love you, Mom, flashed through my mind, while at the same time I could almost feel the warmth of his body against mine. Then I saw myself in my mother's living room again, trying to explain to her my ambitions for a new career, while she constantly interrupted me.
The lamb symbolizes sacrifice, Claude continued, and the fact that Jesus takes it in his arms means that he is accepting his own tragic destiny. His mother, Mary, is trying to protect him from the suffering to come. That's why she is reaching for him. As for Saint Anne, she is watching without getting involved, which shows that symbolically she accepts her grandson's fate.
This explanation of what for me only a few moments earlier had been nothing more than a charming pastoral scene took my breath away. Hanging on Claude's every word, I gazed at the painting with renewed interest, waiting impatiently for what he would say next.
Every mother is afraid for her child and tries to keep him from suffering, Camille.
It's natural. It's intrinsic to motherly love.
But sometimes that fear can hold the child back. He has to fulfill his destiny and make his own way in life. Until now, you have constantly been trying to win your mother's approval. You have stifled your own wishes to keep her happy and not let her down. It's as though all this time you've been walking in shoes that pinched. And now that you're announcing that you want to follow your own path, it terrifies her. That's only normal. But you have to learn to let her be afraid, not to take it on yourself, and to follow your own destiny. Have faith in yourself. Once she sees you flourishing and happy, she will be happy too. Believe me.
I hope so, Claude. I really hope so. As I said this, I wondered exactly what kind of mother I was to Adrienne. Was I doing things the right way? Was I letting him flourish to the best of his ability? He was still young, and his wishes and needs were those of a child. But what about when he grew up? when he had to make his own choices, to find his way as a man. Would I be able to let him do so, without projecting onto him expectations that were not his, just as my mother had done with me? Would I know how to really listen to him and help him fulfill himself? We think we're acting for the best, but sometimes our fears and even our love can blind us. Claude had fallen silent, as if to allow me time to think. I smiled briefly to show that I was all ears once more, and he went on.
Today, Camille, your mother is afraid that this change of direction you're embarked upon will hurt you. But she is going to have to understand that at some point, not doing anything is what would really hurt. The worst thing is not failure. It's not having tried. And besides, you can never protect yourself against future suffering, because that's part of life. It's impossible to escape it. Life is made up of the rough and the smooth. Everyone has to accept that as being an integral part of life's rich tapestry. Resisting it only reinforces our dissatisfaction. That's why wise men learn to act on the things they can control, not on those they can't. You can't change external events, but you can change the way you react to them.
His words seemed to me like a trickle of cool water on a hot summer's day. They strengthened my determination to press on in the new direction I had found for myself and gave me a lot to think about for the future, when I myself would be faced with my son forging his way as an adult. So when a large group of noisy foreign tourists burst into the gallery and interrupted our absorbing conversation, I could not help tutting disparagingly. Claude himself remained impassive, a broad smile on his face. Did he never get annoyed? He led me into another room, still giving me advice.
Camille, can you see how you allow external factors to impact you? You're letting them control your sense of well-being. If that continues, you'll never really be on top of things, and you run the risk of being forever tossed about like a little cork on the waves. On the surface, a wise person may seem to be navigating a storm, but deep down, everything is calm. The secret is to regain control over your mindset, and decide that you will make the most of even unpleasant things. To see the positive, even in the negative. You'll see. If you approach life like that, it alters everything.
All right. But even so, it's not that easy to control your thoughts. We don't always react rationally. I certainly don't. For several days now, I've been having doubts. I'm no longer sure of anything about my project. I'm scared. It seems so risky. And it's not just my mother who has reservations. My best friend and my uncle have also told me they think it was mad to take on something so uncertain in the middle of an economic crisis. I'm wondering whether I shouldn't put the brakes on it all.
Laying his hand on my forearm, Claude talked to me in a warm, reassuring voice, as if I were a little girl scared of the dark.
Camille, what if, to begin with, you replaced I'm scared with I'm excited? It's a trick that often works well. Oscar Wilde used to say, wisdom is to have dreams big enough not to lose sight when we pursue them. You're the one who is right to take a leap of faith. Let me tell you a story. I think you'll find it soothing, and it should boost your confidence. Once a year, in the Frog Kingdom, a race was organized. Every year there was a different goal. This particular year, they had to get to the top of an old tower. All the frogs from the pond gathered to watch the event. The starting gun was fired. When they saw how high the tower was, the frogs in the crowd thought the competitors would never be able to reach the summit. They started saying things like, impossible, they'll never make it. Frogs can't climb up something like that. They'll dehydrate before they get up there. The competitors could hear them. And one after another, they began to feel discouraged. Only a few went on climbing. The onlookers kept insisting, it's not worth it. None of them can make it. Look, they've nearly all given up. The few remaining frogs admitted defeat, all except one, who simply went on climbing, despite everything. And alone, after a supreme effort, the frog reached the top of the tower. Stupefied, the others wanted to know how he had done it. One went over to ask what his secret was, only to discover that the winner was deaf. So be careful, Camille, not to let yourself be influenced by the opinions of those around you. Don't get discouraged. Even those who love you sometimes project their fears and doubts onto you. Take a good look at the people bringing you down, and make sure they don't contaminate you with their negativity. Claude's words echoed in my ears for a long time and did their job. I couldn't, and above all, didn't want to turn back. I was too attached to my new career, and I knew how important it was for me to see it through. It was a question of integrity, so I symbolically put on blinkers and inserted earplugs, determined to keep pushing forward. 28. My goodbye party at the agency filled me with a mixture of joy at the thought of freedom and anxiety at my uncertain future. Had I really made the right choice? I'd surprised everyone. Most of my colleagues just took me for a mother, pleasant enough, happy to glide along in a cozy rut. And yet here I was, transformed into a daring entrepreneur. The meeting room was pretty crowded. My boss had invited the other sales teams as well. He wanted to take advantage of my leaving to build up links between the different sections. Two birds with one stone. Some of them were completely indifferent to the fact that I was going, and to me personally, they had just come to munch on peanuts and drink the free champagne and didn't even say hello to me. Others, however, did come up to say something, most of them finding it hard to conceal a stab of envy. "You're setting up a business at a time like this? I've got a friend who did that. He hasn't been able to pay himself anything these last 5 years. It's not a job. It's charity work." "An entrepreneur? You're going to have to learn to live on next to nothing." And after these words of encouragement, they invariably left with a "good luck" that sounded a bit like "good riddance." Their comments made me furious. Why did they have to bring everything back to money? That really got to me. Even on a minimum wage, a dream is still a dream. I had never felt as alive as I did now, and that was priceless. Happily, a few of my colleagues were really great. Above all, Melissa, the receptionist, who had given me a lovely bouquet of flowers, and Baldy had taken the trouble to buy me a present on behalf of the whole team, a crystal shamrock I could use as a paperweight. It was a magnificent Lalique piece, and I was amazed. "It's to bring you good luck in all your projects," he explained. "You'll be sure to put it in your boutique, won't you?" I gave him a big kiss. I was bowled over to see such consideration from someone like him. My boss also came up to me, and I thought I detected in his eyes a hint of admiration and jealousy. "All the best, Camille. I really hope your business succeeds. You're very brave to undertake such a venture, especially nowadays when hardly anyone is taking risks. But if things don't work out, don't hesitate to come and see me. There'll always be a place for you here." "Thanks so much. I won't forget that." Even if I was hoping never to have to take a step backward. My desk was soon cleared. 10 years of work in one small box. I felt as if I were in the midst of a dream. It was impossible to tell whether it was a good one or a bad one. As I walked down the streets toward home, carrying my little bundle of leaving presents, I felt strange, detached, reeling from a cocktail of contradictory emotions. Relief, joy, a feeling of freedom, but also of stage fright, fear, anxiety, vertigo. Over the following days, I redoubled my efforts to fine-tune my business plan. I had worked out how much capital I had to put up personally. It was meant to be at least 30% of the overall total. Even if I emptied all my savings, I did not have quite enough. Would it be sufficient, though, to convince a bank to give me extra funding? With the help of the incubator people, I prepared a cast-iron dossier. At least, that was what I hoped.
With my business plan sorted, I set off to take the banks by storm. On the morning of my first interview, my stomach was churning. I consulted the time every 36 seconds. Finally, the moment came. And when you've got to go, you've got to go. Besides, I had no nails left to chew. I had downloaded a playlist of power songs. After all, there was a reason why armies marched off to war singing. I listened to Radiohead's No Surprises over and over. It's a song that would encourage anyone to forge her own destiny. I walked down the street convinced I was completely different from anyone else, wrapping myself up in a Technicolor movie of my success story. Was what I was feeling obvious from my face? I tried to read the answer on the faces of people I passed. They probably just wondered who the weirdo was staring at them. But what did I care? My hands were moist, but I could feel wings sprouting between my shoulders. I was ready to fly. Unfortunately, my enthusiasm did not last long. The bank manager received me coldly, hardly glanced at my portfolio, raised his eyebrows at the shortfall in my own capital contribution, and cut short our interview, which lasted barely 10 minutes, promising me a swift reply. In that respect, at least, he kept his word. 48 hours later, I received the thumbs down. My next meeting had the sad air of déjà vu about it. This time, the impact of another bank's refusal caught me in the street, just as I was going home, loaded down with shopping. As well as being upset, I was bitterly frustrated. Yet again, I could see my dream disappearing. Fear and disappointment pricked my throat, eyes, and nose. When Adrien opened the door for me, I barely greeted him. I headed straight for the kitchen so that he wouldn't see the dismay on my face. I was forgetting that children have skilled antennae. They sense everything. "Are you okay, Mum? Should I help you put the shopping away?" "That's all right, sweetheart. I'll sort it out," I said, pretending to be busy with the cupboards. I was deliberately turning my back to him so that he wouldn't see the tears welling up. No chance. "Mum, are you crying?" he asked, leaning over to get a good look at my eyes to confirm his suspicion. "No, I'm fine. I told you. Why don't you go and play in your room?"
"I'm not leaving until you tell me what's wrong."
Heavens, he was self-assured. Adrien sometimes liked to play at being the man of the house and to patronize me. Sensing he wouldn't give up until I explained what the problem was, I told him about the bank rejecting my proposal. "You see, I still need a bit of money to launch my new business, and the bank didn't want to lend it to me. That's why I'm upset. But don't worry, I'm not finished yet." I tried to smile through my tears so as not to worry him still further. He took me in his arms to give me a big hug and said in the reassuring voice of a man of the world, "Don't worry, Mum. It'll all work out." With that, he turned on his heel and went to play in his room. I smiled. What a marvel he was. After putting away the shopping, I washed up and then started to clean the stove, which I hadn't been able to face the previous evening. I scrubbed away, full of the energy of despair, hoping that this simple chore would calm me down. As I was setting the table and calling to Adrien to give me a hand, he came into the room with a delighted but conspiratorial expression on his face.
"Mum, here, take this."
He handed me a brown paper envelope.
"Open it," he encouraged me.
I did as I was told, and inside found a bundle of banknotes and at least 50 coins.
"It's for you," he said, beaming with pride. "I've counted it all. It comes to €123.45. And if that's not enough, I'll sell my Nintendo. That way you'll have enough for your business, won't you, Mum?"
I was choked with emotion. My goodness, how I loved him at that moment, and how handsome he was, with his bright eyes and natural enthusiasm, wanting to save me from failure. I took him in my arms and gave him a big hug.
"Thank you, my love. That's really sweet of you. But keep your money for now. I promise that if I need it, I'll come and ask."
"Promise?"
"Yes, I promise," I assured him.
He seemed pleased and at the same time relieved to be able to keep his savings. Seeing I had a smile back on my face, He must have thought he had been successful, and went off, blithely, to stash his money in his room. His generosity restored my spirits. There was no way I was going to give in. I had to keep going for my own sake, for my son's, and for everyone else who believed in me. It was in this mood that I set off again to seek financial backing and presented my portfolio to a third bank. Once again, several days went by, and I waited, my morale ballooning with the helium of hope. Hope that once more was popped in mid-flight. This third rejection hit me hard. Three banks, and not one of them, wanted to finance me. Nothing I tried had worked. Neither my best Audrey Hepburn smile, nor my wise, confident Gandhi air, nor playing the tycoon like Michael Douglas in Wall Street. I succumbed to despair, to anguish as well. I had quit my job, spent money on creating my own designs. If no bank was willing to back me, I was done. I would have to crawl back to my former boss, beg him to give me a job again, and consider myself lucky to be able to return to my cozy, humdrum little life. No, I would never do that. At that point, I grew angry with Claude. In fact, I was seething. It was his fault I had embarked on this crazy plan. He was the one who had encouraged me to take this step, and now I was going to fall flat on my face. Sebastian would never forgive me. This damn venture could well cost me my husband and destroy my family. Seb would leave me, taking Adrienne with him. I'd be ruined, depressed. I'd end up homeless. I couldn't stop my overheated brain from conjuring up disaster after disaster. I was heading for a plane crash. My mother was right. It's sheer madness. I'll never do it. Galvanized by a potent mix of fury and fear, I rushed to Claude's office, him and his stupid method. I'd tell him a thing or two, make him face up to his responsibilities, force him I didn't yet know to what, but force him anyway. I stormed past the secretary without stopping. Madame, you can't! As if I cared. I flung open the door to his office. Claude interrupted his phone conversation when he saw me burst in. Madame, please, the secretary tried to insist.
Don't worry, Marianne. I'll deal with this. Just a moment, Camille.
With that, he calmly finished his phone conversation. His unruffled attitude only annoyed me more. How could he be so calm when I was so upset? Why did he always appear in control when I was such a mess?
Well then, Camille, what's wrong?
What do you mean, what's wrong? It's a complete disaster. I was turned down by a third bank today. I can't take any more.
I was seething.
Calm down, Camille. There's always a solution.
Oh, no. Stop right there. I've had it up to here with your positive attitude. Look where that's gotten me. Yes, you and your crap advice. Am I being rude? Good. I believed you. I trusted you. I left my job, and just look at me now. Without a cent. I'll be on the street soon. Tell me the truth. What on earth made you think I had it in me to start my own business? It was obviously going to be a disaster.
Claude let me get everything off my chest without saying a word. He seemed distressed to see me in this state. Hearing my tirade, his assistant knocked at the door.
Is everything all right, Monsieur Dupontel?
Yes, everything is fine, Marianne.
Madame Devignon is getting impatient. You had an appointment with her at 1:30.
Could you apologize and ask if she can come back next week?
Thank you, Marianne.
So he was cancelling another appointment because of me. Given the state I was in, I was pleased I had upset his day. He had pushed me to take risks and throw myself into a completely crazy business venture. And I reckoned he was at least partly responsible if I was going to fail.
Now, I would like you to calm down, Camille. Three rejections don't mean all is lost. One bank, two banks, 10 banks. You have to persevere. And if that isn't the right opening, you need to explore others.
Persevere, persevere. That's a good one. You're not the person who has to look at her family every day and see how worried and disappointed they are.
In the confrontation between the stream and the rock, the stream always wins. Not through strength, but by perseverance. That's H. Jackson Brown, Jr.
You know what? Your endless list of quotations is beginning to get on my nerves. They're not going to help me get a bank loan.
Maybe not, but nor is getting into a state like this.
What time is it?
What?
It's 6:15. Why?
Perfect. We've just got time.
Time for what now, Claude?
I asked. His endless mysteries were driving me mad. You'll see. Come on, get your coat.
But before I had time to say anything else, Claude had taken me by the arm and rushed me out of the room. There was no stopping him. In addition to his Jaguar, things must be going really well for him. He had a scooter parked outside his office. He put a stop to any more protests by plonking a big helmet on my head. We sped off through Paris. I clung to him, both exhilarated and scared stiff. The streets rushing past, the anonymous faces blurred by our speed, the blaring horns, the imposing monuments topped by glittering gold, the impenetrable depths of the Seine and its picturesque banks, the Japanese couples posing for endless photos, the street sellers, the curious onlookers, the people bouncing by as if on springs. The Paris merry-go-round left me dizzy. The scooter suddenly came to a halt as Claude parked on a sidewalk and I snapped out of this urban reverie. In front of me, I saw a big gray stone building, the church of Saint-Julien-le-Pauvre.
We're just in time, Claude declared, obviously pleased with himself.
Claude, really, I'm not in the mood. He didn't let me finish, but tucked me inside the church and found us two places in the third row.
Shh, be quiet now, and listen.
I reluctantly complied, because a woman was already coming onto the stage, followed by a man in a dark suit who installed himself ceremoniously at the piano. It took only two songs with their rich, soaring melodies and subtle accompaniment to calm me down. But it was the third song that overwhelmed me. The crystalline purity of the singers, Ave Maria, floated out over the aisle and gave me goosebumps. Tears welled in my eyes, that such fervent emotion and devotion could be contained within a few notes. Claude kept glancing sideways at me, doubtless overjoyed that the magic was working. Shivers of delight ran down my spine. I felt as if I was connected to some higher force, without being able to say exactly what it was. Despite this, the sensation filled me with strength and vigor. I sat through the rest of the concert on cloud nine. At the end, we decided to go and have a drink at the Caveau des Oubliettes. Claude, I'm sorry for the way I behaved earlier. It wasn't fair of me. You're doing all you can to help me, I know. And if I fail, it won't be your fault.
Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm, as Winston Churchill used to say.
There you go again with your quotations.
Whoops, sorry. I simply wanted to tell you again that what you're experiencing at the moment is not failure. It's part of the hazards and pitfalls of a successful business startup. I brought you to the church this evening to show you how strong a fervent belief can be. You must keep faith, above all in yourself. I believe in you.
I muttered, still wary.
So, you'll try again? He asked, extending his hand.
I hesitated a couple of seconds, then held out mine as well. I'll try again. A few days later, I succeeded in getting an appointment with Populisse Bank. I had read in a magazine that they had a reputation for supporting small businesses that had been turned down by traditional financial channels. This time, I didn't let myself get my hopes up. That way, I wouldn't be disappointed. When a week later I was told on the phone that my proposal had been accepted, I could hardly believe it. I waited until I had hung up before I let out a shriek of joy that would have scared the spots off a leopard. I was an inch away from pulling my T-shirt over my face and running round the room like a mad woman, howling, "Goal!" At last,
I had been given my passport to a new life. 29. This success earned me a fourth lotus charm, this time a purple one. I put it on my necklace and stroked it constantly, like a good luck talisman. I hadn't dared to hope I could attain all these levels of change, but I had to admit that the method had worked. Now that I had the necessary funds, I could finally set about launching my concept of leasing haute couture baby clothes at accessible prices. I planned to open my boutique in 6 months' time, and in the run-up to the opening, I wouldn't have a day to spare. Sometimes, I felt I had become a bionic, multitasking robot. I had to be everywhere at once, coming up with ideas, bringing them to fruition, sorting out the logistics. I was going to have to look for help. I needed a second pair of hands. As it turned out, I allowed myself the luxury of taking on four. Four pairs of incomparable hands that I found among young fashion designers who, I was so flattered, saw that my project could be a springboard for their own careers. They therefore agreed to join me for very little pay until my business was properly launched, betting it would be a success. We set ourselves up in a boutique I had rented on Rue Le Goff, a stone's throw from the Luxembourg Palace. It wasn't huge, but it was big enough to start with, and it had loads of charm. Exposed beams, a mezzanine, a very airy back room, and even a basement that could be used for changing rooms and a kitchenette. I took Adrien to visit. "It's really cool, ma'am." What he really wanted to know was if I was going to get rich. He listed all the things we would be able to buy if I did. He could already see himself in the most beautiful cars, a red Porsche one day, black Bugatti the next. He was so sweet, his eyes gleaming with excitement, and his joy made me joyful too. Thank God it would be years before he had to knuckle down and take on adult responsibilities. "Dream, my boy, dream," I said to myself, "and may reality forever be kind to you." I had also moved heaven and earth to find partners who would supply at a reasonable cost the basic garments made of organic cotton and hemp, as well as others made of alpaca, yak wool, and bamboo. When I finally received my orders, I stroked these unbelievable fabrics, reveling in the thought of what I was going to make out of them. During this period, I was filled with unbelievable creative energy. I didn't get much sleep, and yet, strangely enough, felt no ill effects. This astonished me. Usually, I was like a sedated snail if I missed even an hour of sleep. It was as if I were on drugs, and in a certain sense, I was. High on enthusiasm. Bringing to fruition the thing that I wanted most in life was more satisfying than anything I had ever done. I had never known such incredible energy. 30. Claude followed my progress like a father hen. Speaking of fathers, he often reminded me that on the list of objectives I still had to tick off was sorting out my relationship with my father. I protested. "Claude, it's really not the time to ask me to do that. You can see I'm completely overwhelmed. I don't have even a minute to myself."
"On the contrary, there's no better time, Camille. And besides, you know it's been niggling at you for years, like a stone in your shoe. Why put up with the pain another day? You'll be so relieved to have taken a step toward reconciliation. The new Camille doesn't leave problems hanging, does she?"
"All right, all right. I'll see if I can find a minute."
I was annoyed that he was insisting I do this right now. But was he really insisting? Deep down inside, I knew he was right. I couldn't let the situation drag on. I had to confront it. I had swept that particular problem under the carpet of my conscience, thinking it would, in the end, be forgotten. Some hope. Over all those years, it had never stopped gnawing away at me. Guilt and resentment were all mixed up inside me and undermining my confidence. But how could I forgive the person who left my mother and me before I had even taken my first steps? He wasn't a father. He was just a sperm donor. I hadn't seen my father in 6 years, ever since a terrible scene when I had tried to settle scores with him. On that occasion, I really did try to mow him down with a Kalashnikov of reproaches. I had sprayed him with angry bullets without giving him the slightest chance to defend himself. I couldn't have been more bitter if I had swallowed poison. I was determined to hurt him. A little girl's anger can knock over tables and break chairs. All the negative feelings stored away for years had surfaced, erupting like a volcano. I wanted to make him pay for his absence. Why had he left my mother? Where had he been when I was frightened? When I was ill? When I needed a father? Unfortunately, my settling of scores had blown up in my face like a grenade and resulted in an outcome I had not really wished for. A complete break. Weeks, months, and years had gone by without my daring to take the first steps toward reconciliation. I was afraid of how he would react and, even worse, of being rejected once again. With hindsight, I had begun to understand more clearly why he had left home. I was an accident that happened to him when he was far too young. At 23, he wasn't mature enough to cope with a child, nor did he really want to. Nonetheless, he had helped my mother as far as he could afford to, and came to see me from time to time. Those rare, precious moments had left a lasting impression on me, a memory like the sweet taste of cotton candy. It took me a while to unearth my telephone address book, hidden under a pile of dusty papers stuffed at the back of a closet. His number was in it. I sat for several long minutes, beside the telephone, heart beating fast, hands moist, mouth dry at the thought of not knowing what to say. Finally, I plucked up my courage. It rang several times before he picked up. Hello? Silence. Hello? Dad? Silence again. Forgiveness does not change the past, but it does enlarge the future, Paul Bowes said. How true. After my phone call to my father, I felt much lighter. It was as though I had cut the rope dragging a line of heavy barrels along in the wake of my boat, holding it back. At first, our conversation was stilted, strangulated, struggling to emerge. Soon, though, we discovered the sincere, honest voice of our hearts, and our words somehow built a bridge between us. We agreed to have lunch together. We replaced the silences and question marks of our past history with a new dialogue. I could scarcely believe it. 31. Oddly, ever since I had reconciled with my father, I had also begun to feel more relaxed about my marriage. Perhaps I was becoming aware of how much, over the years, I had conflated my father's behavior with that of my husband. How far had my relationship with Sebastian been soured by my fear of being abandoned like my mother? But now that was over and done with. Never again would I allow the past to interfere with the present or affect my relationships. Of course, I couldn't stop my husband leaving me for someone else, if that was what fate decided. But now I was much more serene about it. I knew that whatever happened, I could count on my inner resources to cope. And that certainty gave me a strength I never thought I had. So it seemed I had made my peace with the males of the species. One morning, I was enjoying this thought, drinking a nice cup of green tea, when Sebastian came into the kitchen and handed me an envelope. Here, there was a letter for you. Inside was a brief message. Rendezvous on Thursday at Espace Mille Essentiel for a summit meeting. Be on time, exactly 1:30. See you Thursday, Claude. What was he up to now? Sebastian, who had buttered a slice of bread, was staring at me out of the corner of his eye as he ate it. More work? Yes. Sorry, nothing I can do about it. You never stop. I sensed he was worried or ill at ease. I couldn't exactly tell which, and went over to give him a kiss. Don't fret. It'll be worth it, and you'll soon see how wonderful it's all going to be. I guess so. On Thursday, I abandoned my assistants in the workshop with instructions for the afternoon and rushed to my rendezvous in a glamorous outfit that won me some wolf whistles and compliments in the street. I blushed, but the meeting place was in the smartest area in town, so I had told myself I needed to fit in. And wasn't it also a perfect occasion to see how I was getting on in the skin of the new Camille? If I was to believe the flattering looks I received, it was going quite well. As I entered the Espace Mille Sans Ciel, the sight took my breath away. The lobby itself was like a hymn to the beauty of Asian palaces. Rich fabrics, elegant furniture, subtle fragrances, beguiling colors. I felt as though I had been transported in time and place. It was glorious, and the chandeliers, the antique lamps, the soft, thick carpets laid on parquet floors or handmade mosaics. I was captivated at once by the seductive semi-darkness that threw mysterious shadows onto everyone's faces. But the greatest mystery remained. Why had Claude invited me here? That was the question I was asking myself when I went up to the receptionist. Where's the bar, please? I'm supposed to be meeting someone.
At the end of the corridor, immediately on the left.
I followed her directions, my heart beating loudly. What was the elaborate setup for this time? The bar was as magnificently decorated as the lobby. I studied all the people there. None of them looked like Claude. I silently cursed him for being late. I've always hated having to hang around in a place like this. Men are quick to misinterpret what a single woman might be doing there. I tried hard to adopt a distant, self-assured look, repeating over and over in my head a mantra that had become a habit in recent weeks. I am Audrey Hepburn. I am Audrey Hepburn. My neighbor at the bar had his back turned to me, offering me a good view of his navy blue suit, which, it has to be said, was very well tailored. Nice pair of shoulders, I said to myself, before realizing to my horror that the back was turning toward me.
What are you doing here? Said the man with a disarming smile. But, what? Well, as you see, it's not only your Claude who can spring surprises.
Sebastian took my face in his hands as if it were a precious sculpture and gave me a languorous kiss. I was instantly aroused, although slightly embarrassed by how indiscreet and incongruous such a kiss was in a place like this. Luckily, the barman pretended to be looking elsewhere. Sebastian pulled back and stared into my face to judge how I was feeling about his surprise. I had not seen such passion in his eyes for a long time. Too long. I stammered,
Incredible. How did you manage to—
Shh. It turns out that your Claude is much cooler than I thought. He was perfectly happy to help me organize this little piece of theater. He wrote that message to make you think it was him you were meeting. Fun, wasn't it?
Wait till he hears what I have to say about that, I said.
But I was far too pleased with the result to bear Claude a grudge.
Well then, what do you intend to do with me to make up for tearing me away from several hours of precious work?
Things that will make you glad you came. Besides, a few moments of relaxation will only make you that much more productive. Won't they, my favorite businesswoman?
He had come up with a tough schedule. Hammam, sauna, pool. A gentle scrub with black eucalyptus soap. We lay side by side and surrendered ourselves to the expert hands of young Balinese masseuses, whose expertise took us somewhere close to seventh heaven. I relaxed completely, all the while holding on to Sebastian's hand, which only added to the sensuality of the experience. By the time we left the spa, I was floating on air. The candlelit dinner that followed was the climax of our day together and sent my taste buds straight to nirvana. This place indulged the senses like nowhere else. But what enchanted me most was to discover that Sebastian was gazing at me in the way he used to do. I was his Scheherazade. And that was more than an objective ticked off. It was a dream come true. 32. That idyllic interlude with Sebastian
did indeed give me renewed energy. Luckily, because the period that followed was terribly stressful, I had to put up with infuriating delays, bargain with grasping suppliers, manage a still inexperienced team, deal with unbelievable amounts of admin, be creative at night, but supremely organized by day. In short, I was on the verge of losing it. Fortunately, I had an extraordinary support network. Family and friends came to my workshop to offer loud, sincere encouragement. It warmed my heart. I so wanted them to be proud of me. Claude, my dear Claude, did not let me down either. He had promised to get in touch with his media contacts, assuring me he knew lots of people. That was one thing at least I wouldn't have to do. How was I ever going to thank him? For now, my baby was becoming ever more lively. The delivery date was fast approaching, which meant it was time to find a name for him. I organized a brainstorming session in the back room of the boutique. Claude had advised me to invite people from a variety of backgrounds to enrich the session. We'd get differing and interesting ideas. So, in addition to my team, I asked my hairdresser and my masseuse, who kindly agreed to take part. I told them all about the essential rule for any creative effort. The crossed out C, QFM. No criticism or censorship. A great quantity of ideas. Some fantasy and ideas that multiplied one linking to the next. We also had to keep in mind these key points. Our target was children from birth to three, and we offered ethical haute couture at off-the-rack prices, thanks to our leasing model. To get our brains working, we began by writing down as quickly as possible on a piece of paper all the words that came into our minds. Next, we decided to explore more closely the specific vocabulary of early childhood. Tiny tot, bean sprout, stalk, poo-poo. We agreed no censorship. Knee-high to a grasshopper. Abracadabra. Pat-a-cake. Little minx. Kitty cat bambino. Peekaboo. Pirouette. Sweet pea. Cradle. This little piggy. We also wrote down words connected to the worlds of clothes and fashion. A stitch in time. Blue bonnets. Nimble fingers. Better by design. And other phrases from nursery rhymes. Three little kittens. They lost their mittens. Claude helped us do a positioning map. On the diagram, two lines intersected to make four quadrants. The practical world of children. The world of the enchanted child. Ethical, fair trade clothing, and fashion for hire. This helped us sort our suggestions, which would make our choice easier. Then we began the roll call of names.
Fashion Nemo! Suggested my hairdresser. Words that end in emo are good, aren't they? There's Nemo, Geronimo, or Pinocchio. Or how about Mini-Mode? Good, I'll put that up. Why not Little Goldfingers, said Geraldine, one of my seamstresses. Or Stitches in Time, cried Lucy, clearly delighted with her bright idea. What about Fortune's Child, said Fabienne. It'd remind people of Destiny's Child, but I guess they're not trendy anymore. Biomode, was my masseuse's idea. No, it sounds too medical. We said we wouldn't criticize, remember? The bee's knees? Great, but it already exists. Oh.
After we eliminated names already taken, ones that were too long, others that didn't sound right, and those that were too complicated, we were left with a list of four possibilities. Cadalico, Green Bambino, Fashion Fairies, and Lil Trousseau. They all contained a message and said something about the project.
Cadalico,
the name suggested both an embrace between mother and baby and also hinted at our ecological ambitions. Green Bambino highlighted our ethical ideas too, and with Bambino, intimated that we were producing children's clothes. Fashion Fairies evoked the alluring world of magic, which we thought would attract people buying baby clothes. The fact that it included the word fashion was important as well, because the clothes we created were meant to be stylish. Lil Trousseau. The notion of trousseau implied something that was being passed on. A trousseau used to be a precious collection built up over the years, so we felt this name would lend my concept gravitas by suggesting to the parents that they were giving their child something valuable and unique. The debate raged for a further 2 hours. Then a decision was made. It would be Fashion Fairies. We'd done it. Thank God, we could relax at last. Champagne, I declared, almost euphoric with relief and delight. I had put a bottle in the fridge in anticipation. While we toasted our success together, I wrote the name in big letters on the whiteboard. My imagination was already working overtime to create a logo for my business. 33. And then, the great day arrived. The grand opening at last. The boutique was crammed with people. All the guests crowded around me, glasses of champagne in hand. My little fashion empire was decked out for the occasion. A buffet with an elegant snow-white tablecloth, a butler wearing equally elegant white gloves, and the obligatory solemn countenance, and a glamorous receptionist. My mother was clucking around me admiringly. Next to her, my father, who had made the journey especially, couldn't hide his emotion and kept giving me highly indiscreet winks and congratulatory thumbs up. To see my parents side by side, having buried the hatchet and chatting like a pair of old friends, filled my heart with gladness. Sebastian and Adrienne were in the front row, miming vigorous applause and making me laugh. My son had told all his schoolmates that his mother was going to open a high-fashion boutique for children and that she was going to become famous. Naive, perhaps, yet I was touched by his childish enthusiasm. But what touched me still more was the look of pride on his face. My sole disappointment was that Claude had not yet appeared. He was going to miss my speech, in which, of course, I had decided to offer him my heartfelt thanks. What could he be up to? It wasn't like him to be late, and I was worried. So, it was with a slightly heavy heart that I began speaking and thanked all those who had played a part in the fulfillment of my dream. All of a sudden, there was a commotion at the entrance to the boutique, and the guests inside turned to look. A fresh crowd of people came in. My heart began racing as I couldn't see exactly what was going on. Cameras started flashing. People were calling out. Then, just like the Red Sea in the Bible, gradually the waves of people parted in front of me, making way for, could it be, Jean-Paul Gaultier himself? And right behind him, a beaming Claude, apparently as pleased as I was, and clearly delighted that his surprise had been so successful. I was overcome. My project had already brought me moments of huge satisfaction. When, for example, the printer had called me to announce that my advertising leaflets and business cards were ready, and when the painters put the finishing touches to the magic words, Fashion Fairies, on my shop front. I had been so moved, so overjoyed, I had had to wipe away a few discreet tears. It had been such a long journey in such a few short months. Would success be my reward? I was counting on this opening evening to give me some idea. But now it had surpassed anything I could have imagined. Jean-Paul Gaultier, in person, in my boutique. I extended a trembling hand to my hero. He shook it warmly, as if through an enchanted mist. I heard him explain to everyone that he was pleased and proud to sponsor my boutique, because the concept had really appealed to him. When Claude had sent him details of the project, he had instantly offered to support it in the media, in order to give Fashion Fairies greater visibility. Camille has a great talent as a designer, he went on. Her baby clothes are truly original, and to offer families the opportunity to get top-of-the-line garments at low prices by leasing them is incredibly clever. Bravo, Camille! I couldn't believe my eyes or ears. This was Jean-Paul Gaultier, and he was saying these amazing things about me. I could feel tears welling as he concluded. I will be pleased to offer her my support and, if she wishes,